This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 247. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and I'm joined by Clinton Bonner of 3 In, 3 Out to talk about this big news of Frank Clark being traded to the Kansas City Chiefs. And Clinton, I know you are a huge Frank Clark fan, and this has to be tough for you. I know this because I own a Kayson Williams jersey.
You do. And I don't think it's spelled correctly.
It's a Karen Williams jersey, but I feel like people need to understand that it's actually a Kayson Williams jersey.
I understand that, of course, being a lifelong fan of the pod. No, tough day. I was at a all day business meeting, and I look down and I get the Bleacher Report, thing and fire emoji and everything else that Adam hates. I'm like, oh, I'm like, what is this news? Like middle of a meeting. I'm like, basically just completely, gut punched. I am still a huge Frank Clark fan. I feel strongly, very strongly that this, that he is extremely rare in the NFL. And I think, and the thing for me is, I think he was just coming into his prime. I think he's arriving in his prime and he's an extremely disruptive player. The immediate thing for me was, are we better right now or worse? And it's like, to me, it's not even close. I feel like the delta is a huge gap. I'm like, yes, we got picks. I'm sure we'll talk through it. But I'm like, man, right now we are, I feel like a much worse football team because of this move. And that's kind of where I'm at this point, which is a tough place to be. You know, it's leading into the draft in only a couple of days.
Yeah. In the short term, it does not make the team better. And that's why I wanted to bring you on. You know, I talked to Adam a little bit on the Field Goals podcast after the trade went down, and both of us kind of came out on the same end, is that we understood it from the Seahawks perspective, seeing the 5-year, $105 million deal, $63.5 million guaranteed after Russell Wilson's contract was signed. And knowing that Bobby Wagner could be in line for a raise going into his last year, knowing Jaron Reed could come up, it didn't feel like you could fit all four guys into the salary cap, at least not responsibly. And so I understood it, and especially only having four draft picks. You know, we got on the Ring of Honor a little bit and talked about it, because so many times when these types of rumors come up, you know, it's easy to blow off and say, oh, this, here we go again. It's just another Seahawks player that's going to be, or that they're talking about getting a trade for. But this time felt more real to me, just because the fact of only having four draft picks, him being under the franchise tag, and Russell Wilson just signing the big contract. How are you approaching it?
So there was a couple of things for me. So after digesting it, I can digest it. That's like, sitting back, like you said, it's a little bit more like, okay, I get it. However, my challenges are with it still. I kind of believe they're doing this on the heels of what could be looked at as like mishandling Earl Thomas, right? So it's like, we had the chance last time, we didn't make that, so let's now, quote unquote, do the right thing this time. I still don't think it's the right thing. Like, if Earl Thomas doesn't get hurt, he plays probably really well last year. Yes, he got hurt. That's football. It's part of football. So a part of me is like saying, like, I think they're just like trying to kind of make up for what is a past mistake, where it's a different dude, 4 or 5 years separating them, which is quite a bit in the NFL. That's a real long time in the NFL, and a guy that's like just fully on the rise. So that was kind of part of it for me. And a big thing for me too was that I really felt, and I think you mentioned this on Facebook too, I felt that like Clark was also emerging as like one of the leaders, like if not the vocal leader, where like I get it. Bobby Wagner is like the on the field general, like he's the linebacker, he's the leader out there. But I feel like the locker room leader, and even like the social, the media leader, the person that was becoming the voice of this defense, I mean, Clark even so much went out and said it, like basically said, hey, Sherman, this is no longer yours. Like, I'm the guy now, right? You know, like basically it was a captain, what's the Tom Hanks movie where they get they get boat jacked. He's like, I'm the captain now, right? So I felt like Clark had taken that persona and was running with it. And I just have this at the end, I look at this and go, people are like, oh, you got a good haul. I'm like, well, you know what? It's like, that's like for me, like trading Amazon stock, going with some recent Russell Wilson news, that's like trading Amazon stock like 5 years ago and like, oh, you got a good value for that. It's like, yeah, but now it's worth 5x that if I just held on to like the really beautiful jewel we had, which would be Amazon stock 5-6 years ago. Like I look at Clark, I'm like, I can't, you know, we can't sit here and project. I don't know, but like I can be like, you know what? I think this dude has a legit shot to be like 120, 130, 140 career sack guy. And if you look at that list, you're like, well, that's like DeMarcus Ware. That's Suggs. That's the kind of territory where I think he can be. And I'm like, I just can't get over giving up on a guy at this point in his career. I get it. It's hard to juggle all these pieces, but if I had to force rank them, I put Bobby 1, I put Clark 2, and I know defensive tackles who could also rush like Reed showed last year
right.
are really hard to come by. But I'm like, damn, we got Puna Ford, who is on the cheap, and I think he could be, if we had to cut somebody, if we had to cut one of them, I feel like Ford can actually be more like Reed than whatever we might get out of this haul, this 29 and whatever we do when we trade back could be like Frank Clark. So I'm still, there's a gap there for me still there. And then I look and say, is this team a potential Super Bowl contender as of this morning? I was like, yeah, this team could win the Super Bowl. As of right now, I'm not saying they can't. I just think there's less of a chance that this is a Super Bowl contender after this trade.
Well, one of the things it reminds me of is, I know you watch a little Family Guy. The Family Guy episode where everybody's going to the timeshare and getting their boat. And so they go down and they go through the spiel and, you know, it's time to hand over the keys to the boat. And so in this case, I'm seeing Frank Clark as the boat. Right. And he goes, you know, you could have the keys to the boat or you can have what's in this box. And you know, Lois keeps saying, you know, just take the boat.
Just take the boat.
And but Peter's saying, you know, a boat's a boat, Lois, but a box could be anything. It could even be a boat. And you know how much we've always wanted one of those.
It's a perfectly cromulent, answer by Peter Griffin there, man. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. It's like there's got to be some for me. You know, the hawk in the hand here is Clark, right? It's just like I do feel the cap's going to go up. The cap is going to go back up. There are other players that I feel like are actually going to that could probably come off later, like as in after next year. This might be a bit sacrilege, but like, you know, I mean, you know, Baldwin's making a good you know, amount of money still. If Baldwin is, you know, just has a kind of an average year for him, I'd be okay with saying goodbye to Doug Baldwin after this year if it meant we then had Reed, Wagner, you know, Clark, and then obviously, you know, we signed Russ.
Right.
If we had worked that out. And I just feel like the cap is always going up. So I think we're in the wake of doing the wrong thing with Thomas, plus we're in the hole with only 4 picks. And I know how Schneider does value those picks, but I just still can't reconcile those things to say that this is, in my opinion, and a trade that makes our team better or just a good trade in general. So,
well, the one way that I do kind of reconcile it in my mind is that you have Frank Clark, who is set to make $17 million this year with the franchise tag. When the Seahawks were winning and going to Super Bowls in 2013, 2014, it was because they had some, you know, an incredible set of pass rushers. You know, it wasn't just one guy, though. It wasn't just Michael Bennett. It wasn't just Cliff Averill. And now if you were to take the $17 million that you had set for Clark this year, could you go out and get Ndamukong Suh? With him being unsigned still, could you go out and get, I'm not saying it's a great option. I'm just saying that it's an option.
I'd rather hear Ziggy
next guy I was going to go to. Okay, could you get both those players for the price of one Frank Clark?
Potentially, right? I mean, you know, we got Cassius Marsh back, who obviously, you know, he had 5 sacks last year, what he's kind of his best year so far. So could a dude like that go get 5 or 6? And I get it. Can you compile your way into double digits somehow? And the answer is probably yes. And maybe this is, you know, still a 10, 11, 12 win team. And we're like, you know what? We were good without Clark and we're in a better position next year. And this is kind of, you know, kind of raw right now. That's all very possible. And it got it. And listen, I'm a 41-year-old Seahawks fan. who lives on the East Coast, that I suffered through the, you know, not just the Myers and not just the Maguires, but like the Kelly Stauffer era, you know, and the Stan Gilboss stuff, right? So this has been the best golden era of Seahawks football that we've ever experienced, but like by a long, long stretch. This, it blows away even the Holmgren era, which was a good era. So you have to trust Schneider to say, listen, he does understand when he has to make a tough decision like this, that it's in the best interest. So that's at the back of my brain is just that, like, hey, I do trust our GM. I think he's one of the best GMs in the league and he's making a tough decision. And guess what? That's what they pay to do. So you just have to kind of have that trust at this point. I think we can compile our way there. However, I'll say this, if it was Puna and Reed, and looks like they're going to bring Naz Jones back in some way this year, right? Different position a bit. And if we still had Clark, and then we go get a DE, whether that's like Winovich or some of these others that are being floated out there that we could possibly grab first round, second, third round, super, super deep draft across the defensive line. I can't, again, I'm just like, which one's better? Which one's better this year? And I go back to, cool, we probably had a chance to go get an edge guy, whether it was the first pick, we trade back and, you know, a second or third round pick and still get a quality edge guy this year, mm-hmm. and Clark. And, you know, I think we're kind of missed a pretty golden opportunity to say, okay, look at our linebacking crew. That's specifically if Kendricks doesn't go to jail, but that's a sick linebacking crew. DBs are, that's questionable. There's some things back there that are not beautiful. But if we just got one more edge guy, we had a sick front seven cooking. And now it's like, I think it's a big, big kind of open wound right now. Be like, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to solve this? And, you know, September comes, September's coming pretty damn quick. So it does make Thursday, you know, it does make the draft Thursday, Friday, Saturday, quite a bit more interesting. There's a lot more chips at play. So, you know, you've been doing some amazing coverage. I know you got your eyes on a bunch of players, like with the permutations that of course are kind of endless at this point. Who are you feeling like that Seattle should really target now, position wise or specific players that you're like, well, with these extra chips, I'd really like to see them make a play for, like, what's your kind of like your dream draft at this point?
One of the nice things about having that Chiefs pick now at number 29, it gives you an option to stay put at number 21 if a player falls to you that you really like.
Yep.
And Rashawn Gary has been one of those guys who early on it was sounding like there was no chance that he was going to be available. And now they're saying, oh, well, he played through college. He had a little bit of a shoulder issue that could cause him to drop until the later parts around one. And if he's still there, yeah, that name's pretty exciting to me. To find somebody to replace Clark in the draft right away, I don't think that guy's there. I think what they're going to have to do is get somebody like Ziggy Ansah to come in, a veteran player. And it makes a lot of sense, you know, because, you know, it's similar to what the Patriots do. And I hate to keep going back to the Patriots all the time, but how they do things, but it's obviously worked. So everybody's going to be watching them. Trey Flowers, they allow him to walk away to Detroit. What do? They trade a fifth round pick for Michael Bennett and bring him in. And so they'll be able to replace. It might not be on the same level as Trey Flowers, but it's half the price and they can and use that money other places to provide the team enough depth to continue to compete.
Yeah, and that is, you know, that's going to be the model until Brady finally rides off into the sunset there, and it's hard to argue. You cannot argue with their success for sure, and they've done it before, even, you know, well before just this year too. Obviously, I mean, they traded Chandler Jones at just pretty much at the point we're trading Clark, right?
And Jamie Collins, they traded him, and now he's on the open market. Here's another guy you could go out and get.
Oh yeah. I mean, so it's definitely there. And that's, you know, again, that's all kind of sinking in and being like, okay, you know, hopefully long-term, this is the right move. But as of today, it's still a tough one for me to get my head around because, you know, yes, people look at the sacks and they go, oh, okay, he's up there 13. He's got potential to be a 15 sack guy, but also Clark he's kind of beyond just those sacks though. He's at the least well above average against the run. But beyond that too, he's just that disruptive guy that puts fear into the quarterback. And right now we do not, as good as Wagner is, like as a technician out there, like always in the right spot, always makes the tackle, a Hall of Fame caliber linebacker, ridiculously good. he's not a fear striking guy. And Clark was every single snap. Clark is like, where is that dude? And we don't have that right now. And frankly, there's not that many teams that have those types of players. There's just not that many out there. This may be a small handful, maybe 3 to 5, where it's like you have to account for that guy every single snap because he could just blow it up at any given play. And we lost that. And that's, I think that's going to be tougher to replace than people, even if you compile, even if you get to a combo that gets you 11 sacks or 10 and a half, as opposed to his 13 or 15, whatever he would go get the next year. You don't have that striking fear. And, you know, I think that's going to come back to bite us a bit, at least in the short term this year. That's a tough one to get through. I'm looking at this draft though, and I am happy we've got this extra flexibility now. And the piece that's even like, I was starting to fall in love with the idea that if we had Clark, maybe we could take Simmons, you know, like, cause Simmons is sitting there. It's like, man, if we feel like we're good enough to win this year and win now, that's another piece for me today. I'm like, man, Simmons might very well could be there at 21, or even if we trade back to later first or get a couple of, you know, get a second and a third, Simmons might fall back into the second round. That's kind of just what's been reported. And with Clark, I'm like, you know what? We could take a dude like Simmons, like you said on the last pod too. You know, our first year guys don't really contribute that often. So we could take a dude like Simmons and effectively redshirt him and let him go get healthy. But now I'm like, now I don't think we can. I think we actually lost that luxury of patience with this draft. So I know we gained picks, but I feel like we lost the luxury of being like, we could actually be a little more patient this time. So, which is a bit double-edged.
Well, in some ways, yes and no, because now you have that padding within the salary cap to go out and get a veteran to fill one of those positions. So I wouldn't necessarily take that away. You know, it's interesting that you bring up Simmons because there's the off the field stuff and there's the on the field stuff. And with Frank Clark, you know, we did quite a few shows, you know, going back into the background of mm-hmm. before he was picked, and, you know, with the domestic violence issues, and he seemed to come so far from that and to where a point that, you know, you talk to some people and they don't even remember those issues were even there with Frank Clark.
Right.
And now you have Jeffrey Simmons. Which I, with him, I kind of feel like it's a little bit different though. Like if they were to go out and get Jeffrey Simmons, you know, guy who on video was shown hitting a woman in high school. And I look at that and I go, as a young kid, I could see him protecting a family member because mm-hmm. it was his sister who was in a fight. And so it's, I don't quite put it on the same level. And I know that John Schneider did a ton of research with Frank Clark, and
right.
it was, you know, after 4 years and going to re-sign a contract, you could see that it wasn't a concern of a team to make a trade for him and pay him big money either. So where I did kind of have that question just in the back of my mind, I don't know, just the idea of moving on from Clark and then going to Simmons, it just the idea of it, it's a little bit hard to think about when you take into account the off-field stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not, you know, it's not a laughing matter, not to make light of it at all. But I definitely have to look at what Clark has been as a professional and as a Seahawk. Right.
And just like with Simmons in college, you know, his entire college career, you know, you hear about, you know, how he's, you know, what a great guy he's been in college. But, you know, when people learn about things for the first time, even if it was 4 or 5 years in the past, it kind of, for a lot of people, it feels like, well, I just learned about it. So it brings back a lot of those emotions. Like yeah. It just happened.
For sure. And it's a, you know, beyond the sensitive issue, it's because it's not hyperbolic. It's an issue that warrants the seriousness that comes with it. But when Clark arrived and until now, he's been nothing but it's not even model. He's been a really upstanding teammate and part of the community. Like he's beloved in the locker room, seen as a leader. And every time you turn around on Twitter, besides he's a pretty funny dude on Twitter, but he's just, you know, he's doing things in the community and doing things to give back and be a good person. Maybe it's partly making amends. Maybe it's partly to have the right image so he gets the right contracts. Whatever those motivations are, everybody does things for reasons, right? But I look at his past and say, well, yeah, man, he might have done something. He might have done something bad. I think it was alleged, by the way, right? It wasn't. And then again, the research was there, so we also have to not cast something on someone that was never proven on somebody. You know, we have a whole justice system based on a philosophy of innocent until proven guilty. And then what he did as a professional, he's been a professional. So Kansas City had no problem with it. Kansas City was like, nope, this dude's super talented. And it's funny, I see like plenty of people on Twitter being like, oh, Kansas City got torched again. I'm like, yeah, cool. If you thought you overpaid for Amazon stock 5-6 years ago, you're like, oh yeah, you overpaid for that. But then look at what you have now. Like, I think they're going to end up with a dude that could get like 100 sacks in Kansas City uniform, you know, if he's there for like, let's say eight or 10 years. And that's going to be a great, great get for them for what is essentially just giving up, you know, essentially a late first rounder. And next year, what will likely be tantamount to a early third rounder, right? So very late second rounder, unless the wheels come off. It's probably not going to be an extremely high second round pick. And here's the last part that kind of bugs me too. This is an extremely deep draft where everybody's like, well, the first round doesn't really have a lot of value after, let's say, 10, right? Mm-hmm. It kind of drops off. And then between 20 and 60, it's like, yeah, you know, roll the dice. Who do you like better than the next GM? Cool. In the third round, we fell backwards nine places. I think it's nine. So I'm like, man, like right in this draft where that kind of positioning in that second and third round matters, we also gave up some ground in a spot where everybody's saying that's where the value is. Now, again, trusting Schneider and Carroll to still make a really high quality selection. But it was just another piece where I've listened to a lot of the shows you've put on recently where I'm like, damn, the field is so deep. Moving back nine slots in the third, it could be quite big. It could be quite consequential. I mean, let's see how it plays out. But it wasn't something that was throwaway for me when I saw that we swapped third. So I was like, that's actually pretty substantial given the talent in this class.
Yeah. And I think what it does for you is having a pick now toward the end of the first round, you could flip that potentially for two picks toward the end of the second round. And so you're able to then change that one pick into two picks right in that area where you think that there's a lot of depth and value and still be able to stay put at 21. If there's a guy who just absolutely falls to you that you can't wait and trade down to at that number 21 spot. So it does add that flexibility, but I'm definitely in agreement with you. And, you know, does it make the team better right now? No, but at the same time with Clark, with the team never going to the franchise tag, you know, they seem to pose to it, right? They absolutely gave their guys what they were worth ahead of their, you know, they even allowed Michael Bennett to go and hit the market again, and he stayed put and the Seahawks paid him. So, you know, they pay Richard Sherman on his second contract. They pay Earl Thomas a second contract. You know, they even give Cam Chancellor a third contract.
Yep.
And they aren't opposed to paying guys. And it seemed like with Clark, they're working up to the deadline of the franchise tag. They're not able to get a deal done. I just wonder if that soured them on Clark at that point to where they said, you know, this is the number that we can go up to and we can't go past this. And he said, well, if you want to keep me, you're going to have to go past this. And you heard one of his quotes today. Well, through Josina Anderson, one of the things he said was, it's part of a business. You have to play your cards right in the game. That tells me that maybe he didn't play his cards quite the right way that he wanted to be able to stay in Seattle long term.
It could be. And I think I look at the I don't call it the inverse. It's not the inverse. It's maybe just the other side of the coin, in the sense that the moment they put the tag on him, It was, you know, I had the Obi-Wan, like, I've got a bad feeling about this.
Right.
Because at that point, I felt like, man, if we could just extend Clark now, because at that point, we probably could be at the $18 million level before the DeMarcus Lawrence contract and the other contracts start rolling out, where they start going over 20 and going, whoa, this is getting a little too rich for our blood. The moment Lawrence's contract got done, it got worse. It was like the Obi-Wan saying it again, like there's something that you'll be the death of me, you know, like Anakin, right? I was like, this is probably not going to break the right way, because now it's just giving ammunition for Clark to say, you know what, for 17-1 or 17-2, whatever it is, I'm not going to show up. I'm going to hold out.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, starting to float that idea, and Schneider was saying, no, that's not how I see it. But I kind of think that's what he was starting to float around. And I felt strongly that we missed the moment to get him, quote unquote, on the cheap. I felt like if we put the contract down, I have no idea, this is pure speculation,
right,
but I felt like if we had put the $18 million or sub $20 million contract down for him before the tag, he probably would have extended, because look at the position he's in. He earned like something like $3.8 million so far as a pro, and all of a sudden he could have an $18 million with whatever it might have been, let's say a $50 million guaranteed. And instead they can't get there. They apply the tag. The next dude gets the bag, and Lawrence gets that $20 million marker APY, gets the bigger guaranteed. And it just shifted it that much more. And you know, people might say like, oh, 18 or 20, what's the difference? it's actually quite a huge difference, like percentage wise. And when you're trying to build a cap, it's a huge difference per year in what you could do with that extra money. So
if somebody offers me $20 million to do the same exact job as somebody who offers me $18 million, $2 million is a lot of money.
A lot of money. It's a lot.
When I'm talking about him playing his cards wrong, that's what I wonder. I wonder if the Seahawks did offer him that type of deal. You know, deadlines make deals, and we saw that with Russell Wilson. Yeah. And the franchise tag deadline was coming up. There was all the news that that they were talking to Clark's agent. He was at the meetings that were leading up to the franchise tag deadline. You know, did they put their best offer on the table there and say, you know, this is where we can go? And if you take the franchise tag, yeah, we're comfortable with that number for next year, but we're going to look at potentially shopping you. And I have to think that maybe those conversations took place, and that's why they ultimately were looking to make this deal now.
It totally could be. And I got two other topics for you too. So I left my business meeting a little downtrodden about this news. I went and coached my kids' baseball. That was fun. Brought me back up. And then I get back in the car and I see on Bleacher Report, like another article, about that Seattle had a chance at the Jets number 3 pick. Did you see any of that? Did you get a chance to dive into that? Is that verified? And was it straight up, like, was there a specific deal they're talking about? Because all I saw was Seahawks had a chance at 3, and I was like,
yeah, why would you take 29 if you could get 3? But it sounded right.
Like why burger when you could have steak? Like what was the difference there?
What it sounded like to me was that Schneider made the call to the Jets to float the idea, you know, would this be something that you're interested in? And they said no. So I think with Schneider, you know, you're going to work your way down the list, right? Well, and maybe not Cardinals and maybe not the 49ers, because they're in the division.
You skip those dudes always. But like I say, you have rank of the girls you want to take to the prom, and you go down the list, and like, you know, Betty Sue said no, and Jamie Lynn said maybe, and you know, Betsy Ann said yeah, I'm in. You go with the girl that said yes, right?
Because if you're able to get the number 3 pick, you know, holy smokes, people make the joke about all the picks that you could trade for with the number 3 pick. But this year, you could either look at, you know, you're looking at one of the top quarterbacks still being on the board, or one of the mm-hmm. top defensive linemen. You know, it seems like the top 3 is pretty solid with Kyler Murray, with Quinnen Williams, and with Nick Bosa. So
yep.
To be in that third spot that the Jets have, you know, that would be a really valuable spot to be in. If Clark, if they were able to make that happen, then great. And, you know, who knows, maybe that deal was on the table and they just couldn't get the type of contract that Clark wanted that Kansas City was ultimately able to make happen too.
Yeah, true point. There's tons of variables, but I happened to see that after. So I had this sandwich of being like depressed and down about the Clark news and a good baseball practice, and then like, wait, we could have had a 3, or we had a shot at the 3.
That's why when I posted in the Ring of Honor about how I really felt like, you know, this wasn't just a bunch of talk. It seemed different with Earl Thomas, with Richard Sherman. Yeah. Oh, sure. If somebody were to come along and offer us a couple first round picks, then of course, yeah, you know, those guys are, we would consider trading them. But with Clark, considering the franchise tag, considering the money, the fact that you're not able to really hide the fact that you got to trade the guy because he's on the tag. He has to agree to the deal. The agents have to work with the team to hammer out a new contract before the actual deal even happens. Because he has to say, okay, I'll sign the tag that allows me to be traded. And that's just a lot of moving parts to try and keep that quiet.
Yeah, that's a very, very valid point. And yeah, for me too, it's just, I didn't want to believe it, but it still felt more grounded in reality to me as well. I was like, well, these things make sense.
Right.
And again, for me, it was simply like Wagner, Reed, just paid Russ. There will be some odd man out, likely, you know, that the idea of signing all four of them was probably just not going to happen. Again, for me, my totem pole was probably kicking Reed out in my brain. Although defensive tackles who can get up the gut pressure are absolute premiums.
And maybe, you know, Reed would have been the guy had Frank Clark said yes to a deal for a little bit less than what the Chiefs are willing to offer, you know?
Correct. I do think so.
I do think that Seattle had a number that they were offering him to keep him here.
You know, no, this is what these guys do for a living, right? I'm sure John Schneider had a number in mind that would have satisfied, that would have kept him here. But, you know, now the die is cast, right? So now it's like, let's make Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Let's do all we can to.
We might have a pick in the first round, Clint. That might actually happen.
We have two chances to not make it four in the second and third, but which is still a possibility considering the depth.
Sure.
Now, I feel strongly, very strongly, that wide receiver is a position of like super need this year, because I really feel I think Baldwin is a bit on the decline, just due to injury. I love the dude. He's savvy, and he's a route runner, a precise route runner. It doesn't have to be a burner, but I still think he's likely on the bit of decline just because, you know, father time. Plus, he's coming off of some serious surgeries. I do think Lockett is a legit, you know, 1/1A, but I really worry about the rest of the our wide receivers. I'm not sold on any of them at this point. I'm not sure they're going to spend a one on a wide receiver, nor do I think they have to.
Yeah.
But are there any particular wide receivers? And I know you talked to quite a bit with Rob about this, but are there any that really stood out to you that you like, you know, if there was a particular wide receiver? Let me give you a two-parter.
Okay.
Like a wide receiver that you are like kind of most enamored with, and maybe a wide receiver that you feel could step in day one and be effective for Seattle this year. And are they the same player?
I have two guys that I wouldn't be sad if the Seahawks took them. And one of them is one guy that for Field Goals, we did a Draft Crush article. And the guy that I submitted was a wide receiver. And it was Deebo Samuel of South Carolina. I see him kind of in that same mold of Doug Baldwin. You know, he can run routes to get open. He doesn't just do it with speed, although he does, you know, he does have the speed, he has quickness. I feel like he's more of a, I see him kind of in that Golden Tate type mold, you know.
And Tate's a damn good player, right? For a lot of years.
Right. Right. And they haven't had that because they brought in Percy Harvin,
which I can get into that, but
but then through talking to Rob, I gotta say the Terry McLaurin pick. Yeah. Is the other guy who's going to be available in that same area toward the end of round one. And maybe it's because Rob Staton keeps bringing up Michael Thomas's name when he talks about Terry McLaurin. He's definitely one that if he were there and the Seahawks were to take him, I'd be excited about that pick too. And I go back to the play that just sticks in my mind is the one where Haskins throws it out. You know, it's kind of like one of those bubble screen type plays, and he throws it out to Paris Campbell, you know, another receiver that I like quite a bit. He throws it out just a bubble screen to Paris Campbell, but Terry McLaurin goes and just lays into one of the DBs, and then he lays into another DB and puts him on his backside, and Paris Campbell runs in for a touchdown. Like, he blocks two dudes.
Yep.
That, and I think that, you know, that's the type of guy Pete Carroll is going to want on the team.
I agree. Like McLaurin is, to me, was, plus we could like have some fun with like the Metaclorian account, his count or something like that is off the charts. Right. So he could be a Jedi unto itself, but he's just, I think he just kind of has that slot, that guy that can step in and be really effective day one. But it's just back to those dudes. Like, I am so non-interested in like the Metcalfs and even Harry to an extent. It's like, listen, I get the big body dude who can go up and get a ball. And that guy makes amazing grabs. Like, yeah, he's got incredible hands. I get all that. But I just want dudes like Lockett and Baldwin who can get open on their in their own accord, because we have like one of the, if not the most precise passer in the entire league, the dude who can get the ball downfield, put the ball where it has to be. And if you give him a small window, the ball's there. And again, that could work a bit with 50-50 guys who are just jumping up and getting the ball. That's fine. But I just feel like that there's way more a dime a dozen versus the guys that actually could come out of college and be like precise route runners day one.
Yeah.
And like Lockett was that. That's when we got him from K-State, just watching that dude's film back then. I'm like, man, this guy is a pro. Like, now he's a pro right now. And he showed that year one. So I'm just super hopeful that with this trade and what we can do with these picks, that we're able to do something. Maybe it's first round, maybe it's like, you know, a second round, or whatever we end up doing with this 29th is the one I think we'll probably end up moving, that we can get one of these wide receivers that can just make it on their own. And then you're looking at like hopefully a healthy Baldwin, Lockett, and then one of these newer dudes that could come in day one and contribute. And again, I'm not dismissing some of the other players. I'm just not nearly as high on the rest of the wide receiving core as I think some others are.
Yeah, he still have, you know, Jerron Brown. He's coming back for another year. He's definitely capable. Another year in the system, you know, chemistry with Wilson.
And he caught touchdowns. He caught touchdowns. He had
the five touchdowns. So, yeah. And then you have David Moore, you know, coming back for another season, continuing to get better. A seventh round pick in 2017. You know, it's taken time for him to develop. And we saw the flashes through the first half of the season. You know, could he?
100%.
Could he grow into that role? So even if they don't take a receiver with their first two picks, I wouldn't be that upset either if they go defensive lineman and defensive back. You know, you talked about there being issues in the defensive backfield.
Yeah.
Another guy to add to that group for competition. Okay.
And you've got to fill in Coleman somehow. And maybe we have that answer already.
Sure.
That could be on the roster for sure, but definitely want to get somebody there to compete too. And I hope that Moore proves me wrong. And the first 8 weeks of the season, the dude looked like he could be a pro bowler. The last 8 weeks of the season looked like he forgot how to play football sometimes. Like his, like, you know, footwork around the sidelines, like not having great presence, just not timing the ball the right way, like not just missing blocks. He looked like two different dudes.
Yeah.
In two halves of the year, again, a seventh round pick, you take a flyer, the dude's got talent. I'm very hopeful, but I also don't make it like a strategy of pinning stuff like that on hope when it's like, I think the rest of the wide receiver core, sans our top two dudes, is a little lean, and our number one guy, or maybe he's number two now, is just coming off of a couple of injuries, so a couple of surgeries too. So we shall see. But you know, I'm digesting the Clark news. I'm coming through the other end and saying, you know, now the die is cast. Let's just get ready for Thursday and Friday and Saturday. And let's see what we can do. Like, I hope we could turn this now into, what do we have? We have five picks now, right?
Five at this picks, point. Yep.
All right. I mean, can very much see that turning into seven or eight now that we have these two high picks.
Yeah, pretty easily.
Yeah, pretty. A couple different ways that could happen, right? And let's see. I'm super now. I'm like really engaged with this draft more than I've ever been. I have to say, probably partly because I've been listening to you for, you know, 2 months talk about it, but very, very fired up for this one, and hopefully we could just. I just want to get through the next, let's say, 6 weeks or so, and then feel like we're basically on par with where we were yesterday as a team.
Right.
I don't expect to feel better because I think Clark is a big, big loss. But if we can get some veteran presence there to start to be one of those compilers, plus we really had what looks to be a strong draft, I think I'll feel pretty good about how we're positioning. To me, the Rams are looking, to me, I think they're going to take a step back. I really do feel fairly strongly, while the Niners should be better, and then Arizona's just, who knows what happens with Arizona. They take Murray, they could be an eight win team. Just like Ravens with Jackson last year, just all of a sudden catch a bit of fire, and the NFL doesn't know what to do quite yet with that kind of player. So I expect the division on the whole to be better, I guess I'm coming through all this, and the therapeutic pieces, I still feel like we could win this division and we're still a Super Bowl contender. And if I feel that way, plus we have a brighter future, I think I've convinced myself that this is not the end of the world for Seattle, that it can be okay. But again, hopefully 6 weeks from now, we're in at least a position of being like par with where we were yesterday.
Well, that's why I wanted to get you on, Clinton, knowing that you are probably the biggest Frank Clark fan that I know, and that this news had to be tough for you. But when it all comes down to it, you're not going to jump ship over to the Chiefs. In fact, you know, we actually have to root for the Chiefs to lose now because we have their 2020 second round pick. So we need the Chiefs to have the worst record in the league next year for all the better pick in 2020.
Let's see it, right? I mean, hey, that I'm hopeful it's not pick 60 or pick 61 or pick 59, and somehow it ends up being like pick 47 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean,
Mahomes would probably have to get hurt for that.
Not to wish injury on anybody, but I kind of hope that a lot of their players get injured and we have a better draft pick.
I want to have the best draft pick we possibly have. Yes, exactly. So it is what it is. But yeah, it'll make Thursday more fun, and we'll take it from there. It's going to be it's the off season. It's going to be fun, and I will miss Clark, but at this point I hope they go 0-16.
Well, Clinton, I think with that there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.